sports, culture, and entertainment in the Coachella Valley. This is the Desert Scene with Bonnie G from the Mutual Broadcasting System. Here's Bonnie.
And welcome to the Desert Scene. Happy to have you here and very happy to welcome to the show Dana Steele, who is a Texas Rock Radio Hall of Famer, also a best-selling author and accomplished speaker. And she's got a one-woman show at the Revolution Stage Company called The Woman in the Mirror, all about her journey with her mother and Alzheimer's. Hi, Dana. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Terrific. Thank you for being here. So, you know, it's interesting. You and I have some things in common, radio careers, and also my mother had Alzheimer's. She passed 12 years ago, so it's been quite a while.
It's something I've learned from doing this show. It's so much more widespread than people have any idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell, this started as a book, correct? And it's sort of morphed into a one-woman show?
Well, you know, it started with me not wanting having to call 300 people to tell them my mother had Alzheimer's. So I started posting on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Yes. And then that grew into the book, which then grew into it's actually not a one-woman show. It kind of started that way. It's very much now a theatrical play with I have an amazing co-star, Rebecca McWilliams, who is here in the desert. She just directed Beautiful, the Carole King musical.
Oh, super.
And she's amazing. So, you know, Bonnie, this is not what I expected to be doing. I expected to be floating in my pool and playing golf in Palm Springs. Mm-hmm. And now I'm doing a play. So there you go.
So tell us, were you your mother's primary caretaker during this time?
I was the person in charge of making all the decisions and had, you know, the money and all that. I initially moved her into an independent living facility, a great place called Regal Estates, south of Houston, that was really close to us. And we'd had friends there. She'd been there. She loved the food. She loved the people. And that was before I even knew she had Alzheimer's. I just thought she was, you know, old and dingy. She's getting dingy. I need you closer to me.
Right.
And the moment where I knew we had a problem there was when I came to visit her and she was carrying her walker in front of her down the grand staircase. Dana, hey!
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and it just kind of grew from there. And I ended up having to move her six times because I didn't, you know, I'm a fairly well-read, smart person. Mm-hmm. And nobody has any idea what's coming. And that's kind of what this play is for. Somebody asked me the other day, who'd you write this for? Mm-hmm. And I said, it's taken me about 6 years to realize I wrote it for me, Bonnie. Mm-hmm. I wrote it for me to tell me I did a good job and I did the best I could. And there's no right way or wrong way. And to get over the guilt, there's such an incredible amount of guilt that comes after the journey is over. Did I do the right thing?
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it's for, you know, it's for the three kinds of people that are out there. The people who have been caregivers who are still carrying that guilt. The people who are currently caregivers, to let them know you are not alone.
Right.
And you are doing the best damn job you can with something that's so crazy. And it's also for those people that have no idea. They think they're prepared or they're not prepared at all.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite lines in the play is, clean out your damn closet. Don't wait for your kids to do it.
Yes.
Unless you don't like them. And if you don't like them, don't clean anything
then
out.
Just leave it all, So some people might, especially people that maybe are dealing with it or had dealt with it, I think it's crucial, isn't it, to try to maintain a sense of humor wherever you can, because it is such a toll that it takes on you and is so serious. But you've got to find some humor here and there to survive, right?
You have to. And I've always used humor to get myself through anything. But I remember very specifically, because it's in the play, I wrote a Facebook post. Oh, my God, I just laughed at my mom. Mm-hmm. What is wrong with me?
Yeah.
And the stories that people shared. Well, first of all, the tagline for the play came from that. If you don't laugh, you'll cry.
Right.
And then one of the funniest stories anyone has told me since. This woman said, I walked in on my grandmother watching hardcore porn.
Oh my God.
And she finally turned around and said, they have never done this on The Young and the Restless before.
That is funny. That's very funny.
I have. So I think people are surprised, even though I've told them it's a timely comedy, and a dark comedy.
Yeah.
I think people in the audience laugh, and then they feel guilty for laughing, but that's it. It's okay to laugh and cry and throw things and say the F word and do whatever it is you need to do to get through this.
Absolutely. Well, let's go back for just a moment. So I was looking at your background so you're native of Texas. Went to Texas A&M, originally pre-med, but decided that wasn't going to work. So you switched to theater.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't like the sight of blood, but, you know, I'm going to be a doctor. I was 16 when I went to college. You know, I ended up with, I had my own apartment and a boyfriend in a band. I was having a great time.
Wow. Yeah. And then you had a big radio career. So tell us a little bit about that.
Got into radio on a dare because I wanted a date with a DJ, and I thought if I auditioned for the student radio station, he would be impressed and ask me out. He never did, but it's what I did for the next 25 years. I'm very proudly in the Texas Radio Hall of Fame.
Excellent.
I was a rock and roll DJ. Bonnie, I love to tell people I used to could stay out past 8:30 at night. It used to be cool.
We all did back in the day. Yeah, yeah.
I was one of the top rock DJs and one of the top female rock DJs in the country in the 80s. So I will tell you, I am really happy there were no cell phone cameras back then because we had a really good time in the 80s.
Now, did you, performing is performing. It's all basically went. But did you do any actually stage theater also during that time?
No, I have always wanted to be an actor. And in high school, I ran the lights. And that was only because I was hanging out with my girlfriends were all in theater in high school. And I would go hang out with them because that was the only place we could go out in the parking lot and sneak cigarettes.
Mm.
So I would go stand backstage and wait for them to finish. And opening night of, I think, Oklahoma, the light guy got grounded because of his grades, and Myrtis Brooks, our drama teacher, said, "You've been standing there for weeks. Can you figure this out?" And they had to get me to a box to stand on. The huge lighting thing they had back then. And so I sort of dabbled.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1990, I quit my radio job and moved to LA to try acting for a living. And I've always said I discovered I couldn't act my way out of a box, but I met my husband right before I left.
Uh-huh.
And quite honestly, I did not want to do this. I had never planned to do this play. And the woman we hired to do the initial previews in November of 21 in Houston dropped out the first day of rehearsals because her mother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's.
Oh, my gosh.
So I had to step in. It's like a movie, Bonnie. Yeah. I had to step in. I had to play myself, which is a lot more difficult than it sounds, especially when you're terrified on stage.
Yeah.
And there was a Broadway producer in the audience for one of those 10 performances, and it took off from there. I have a Broadway manager. I have a Broadway producer. We're working out some of the last minute changes in the script. I'm really happy with what we have here.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take it to a few more regional theaters the rest of the year. And then, you know, my lofty goal is eventually off-Broadway and then the Helen Hayes Theater on Broadway. So
wow.
I always say voice what you want, no matter how crazy it is, because you never know who's listening.
Absolutely. Yeah, manifestation, you've got to put it out there. You've got to put it in your mind before it's going to show up. Well, that's a lot of serendipity. Absolutely. I'm looking at some quotes here. The woman in the mirror is certainly not meant to be a preachy God on how one should deal with a loved one's deteriorating health and capacity. It does give everyone living through permission to laugh and learn. Yeah. Keeping your sense of humor, what advice might you give someone else who's dealing with this right now, who's a caregiver or a family member right now?
Find a support group. Mine just happened to be Facebook. I call it my dysfunctional support group.
Mm-hmm.
Find a support group. If there's a guy called Josh Pett, his mom was the one who the video went viral of her talking to herself friendly in the mirror. My mom was just the opposite of that. But find a group, whether it's your religious affiliation, a local hospital, a Facebook group, whatever. It is so vitally important that you have people that you can ask questions of, that you can vent.
Mm-hmm.
We were reworking the script a couple of years ago, and I turned to my husband and I said, you know, as I write this, I realize it is the loneliest thing I've ever done in my life. And he said, oh, my God, write that down.
Yeah.
But I mean, even though I was surrounded by fans and friends and family, it was solely my responsibility to make some very heavy decisions.
Right.
Like where to move her, what kind of treatment. And each time you move somebody in this progression, you have to get rid of more of their things.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So you have to decide, does it mean anything to her? She literally had, the sixth time I moved her, she had one framed picture of the two of us and somebody else's clothes. I mean, the clothes get all mixed up in these places.
Yeah.
You know, pick your battles. Get over that. Don't let that bother you.
Yeah, yeah. Now, are you an only child? Did you have siblings helping with you with this, or it was just you?
I have a younger brother, but in any, you know, just about 99.9% of all circumstances with dementia, it usually ends up being one person in the family that's doing most of the caregiving and or the decision making. My brother was going through a really contentious divorce. He was emotionally, financially, geographically
unavailable,
just not available.
Yeah.
He was about an hour and a half away.
Yeah.
He only questioned one of my decisions once, and I just turned to him and blew up and said, it is not that easy to move her. It is extremely hard to find a place, move them, get them settled, and the expense. And if you would like to take it over, go right ahead. And I was like, oh, no, you're doing a fine job.
Yeah. So do you mind my asking, so did you have to move her so many times because it just wasn't the right care? Or because that's a lot of stress, just moving somebody over and over.
Well, the first time I moved her to Regal Estates, I knew upstairs was independent living, and I knew downstairs was some assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that's all she'd need. Nobody talks about how insane this gets, how you can't leave. You know, when people go, well, I'm just going to live with my kids. Well, first of all, that's mean. And second of all, somebody's going to have to quit their job
to be there. Yeah.
And they're going to have eyes on you 24/7. And it's going to take away from their marriage and their sex life and their kids and everything.
Yeah.
So I thought, this is perfect. It's just on the other side of the lake from us. It has bingo. She likes the people. She likes the activities. And then when she does need a little more assistance, I'll move her downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, nobody told me that, you know, first of all, in Texas, there are different levels depending on if you're in a hurricane zone. Well, when her, you know, I moved her from the independent to the downstairs when she carried her walker down the grand staircase. But then they said, Dana, you've got to, you know, we love her. We would keep her here forever if we could, but we are a class, I think it was a class A, and she needs a class B, because should we have to evacuate, she's not going to be able to take care of herself as we're getting everybody together. She can't pack herself up.
Right.
So I found a place that I thought was good, another little apartment, a little more, but still it had bingo and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And she was there for about 6 weeks, and they were like, Dana, she needs memory care. She's trying to leave. She's becoming a roamer.
Yeah.
And she's starting to hit other people.
Mm.
And my mom was an extremely sweet person. She loved everybody.
Yeah.
And everybody loved her. So then I moved her the fourth time into the other side of this facility, which had locked doors. Oh, Bonnie, locked doors?
Yeah.
It was, and that was the worst place I moved her, because I would come to see her and there'd be one 20-year-old, you know, assistant in charge of 30 memory care patients because everybody else had gone to lunch.
Yeah, yeah.
Mom would have a black eye or she'd have bloody hands. So I finally found a care home that looked like her house, the colors, the style.
Mm-hmm.
I could come and cook. I could come help cook because she and I love to cook together. It only had 8 people. It was 4 men and 4 women. And that worked for a while, but there was a man there that was bald. And my dad was bald, and all we could figure is that he wasn't doing whatever she thought she told him to do. So if he walked anywhere near her, she would try to trip him, smiling ever so sweetly.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
She loved peanut M&Ms, and she would literally sit on one side of the living room and ping them off his head.
That is funny.
Again, one of the funniest things
funny.
In the play. I'm like, Mom.
Yeah.
And you can't tell it. You know, you can't tell anybody at that stage of the disease. Stop
not
it.
To do it. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so we moved her. Fortunately, this wonderful company, the woman that ran it, has since passed away. But, oh, my God, she had one more home. Again, I could cook. I could come and hang out. Only 8 people, but it was 8 women.
Mm-hmm.
And Mom just seemed to be much calmer.
There, yeah.
And not happier. She was not happy at the end. She was pissed.
Yeah.
She was pissed off because Dana Steele never came to see her.
Oh, dear. But less agitated.
A woman in her 50s named Dana.
Yeah.
She wanted the 25-year-old Dana that was on the radio.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this sounds...
So that was hard.
Yeah. Revolution Stage Company presents California premiere of Dana Steele's dark comedy, The Woman in the Mirror. It's already open, runs through the 31st. You can go to revolutionstagecompany.com or call 760-318-4115 for tickets. Dana, congratulations on this, the success of this. And thank you for being here. Really appreciate it.
All right. Hope you can come see it. Thanks.
I'm going to try. Thank you so much. All right. Dana Steele, thank you. And we'll see the rest of you the next time on The Desert Scene.
This program was produced by the Mutual Broadcasting System.